Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, still full of Tuesday's pancakes, I think, so I don't know. I probably don't have to eat for another week yet, but...
I remember seeing you at the budget meeting. Oh!
No, because I was full of pancakes. I'm going to give up being cold for Lent, I think, so, yeah.
Okay, good Whatever. Luck.
Yeah. Well... Maybe towards the end it'll be okay, but we'll see.
This is already going wrong.
Okay. This is the Sunday show, actually.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Today, we will talk about the state of the NDP. Jagmeet Singh is in the House now, but the number of experienced caucus members he might have for the next election is getting smaller and smaller. So what is the state of the NDP? And then we will welcome back James Gordon to the show. He's the Ward 2 City Councilor, or one of the Ward 2 City Councilors, I should say, and we're going to talk to him about the recently passed budget and other issues at City Hall, and he also has a new album coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very rare you get, you know, let's talk about
the triple
the budget yep. and your new album. So that'll be a nice... Anyway. But first, the SNC-Lavalin affair got hot again this week with Monday, the resignation of Treasury Board President Jane Philpott. And... then on Wednesday, yesterday, we had testimony from Gerald, a.k.a. Seymour Butts. The former... I always do.
We haven't had a Simpsons joke in a while, but yes. There's one for every occasion.
The former long-term advisor to Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. And then this morning we had Justin Trudeau do a sorta culpa in a press conference.
Now, I actually missed that. Do you want to give us a bit on... You're informing me as well as to what's going on. I just saw the aftermath, but yeah. I didn't. What did he actually say? I'm sorry.
He didn't say I'm sorry so much. He didn't say he was sorry. He said he was sorry if there was like a misinterpretation of intents.
Right.
He kind of just repeated like much of Gerald Butts's party line. It was just, you know.
Sorry to put you on the spot there, Adam, but
no, it's okay.
Because I think we talk about Butts as if he's a former advisor, but I don't think he's going to go too far. I mean, he's not official anymore, but
no,
he's still within the sphere. For lattes. They have to, right?
Well, no, I think that
he's just been
still part of
backburnered.
Backburnered.
Backburnered, is that a thing? If it isn't, I just invented it. So,
but I mean, it would not be unforeseen or unbelievable if he had been planning to depart the government side anyway to go work for the election side.
Which would have just happened very quietly had none of this been going on, right?
Oh, exactly.
I'm doing this now.
But yeah, so it was... There wasn't not really any apology. Trudeau talked about having to work harder. That there was a miscommunication, that he didn't think he was leaning hard on Jody Wilson-Raybould. Sorry if there was any misunderstandings.
It's all been a big misunderstanding.
Yeah, right? More or less. Which I don't think many people are buying, sadly. Or, I mean, sadly, in like the idea of like wanting to get past this and... put this to rest, because I think one of the things I've had difficulty with, and as someone who even follow these things closely, is like, what what happened? What did, like, why is Andrew Scheer demanding a resignation?
Because there's an election coming?
You know,
he probably would do it anyway, but...
Right, you know, I think...
Is it resignable? Is that a word even? I don't know.
We're just making up words.
Something
you
would resign over...
But I think one of the things I've had a lot of trouble with is that there's been like really no context in the TV side of this anyway, or even on like the social media like projection side of things. It's just like, he has to go. No, this is a conspiracy. Get out of here. Why are you slandering our fine young prime minister? And I swear to God, I was watching the news on Tuesday, and it was after Jane Philpott's resignation, and the TV host brings on this, like, I don't know where he was from or why he was there, but it's just like, so is the government imploding now? And he's like, yes, it is. After two people resigned. You know,
was he from the Fraser Institute or one of those?
I have no idea where he's from because I was barely paying attention. And I just looked up in time for him to go, well, yes, it is. And it just reminded, speaking of Simpsons, it reminded me of like that one gag when, you know, Kent Brockman has the professor on. He's like, professor, is it time for people to crack each other's heads open and feast on the goo inside? And he's like, yes, I would, Kent. And it's, you know...
That's exactly it.
Right. I googled, you know, I actually googled
Kent
the
Brockman.
Phrase.
No,
I actually googled the phrase. Did Justin Trudeau break the law? And I actually found a pretty decent National Post article that basically phrased it as like, you know, speaking strictly in terms of Canadian law, no.
It was very, very bent.
But there was an interesting comparison of what's going on down south with Trump and, you know, leaning on James Comey to drop the charges against Michael Flynn when that happened in 2017. And when you kind of look at it at that angle, you're like, okay, I can sort of appreciate why this is the big deal. But I think the media coverage of this has been lacking that context. It's just been about yelling at who's done what and who's lying about what and who's resigning and who's imploding and who should resign. And I think the echo chamber has not served the issue well.
No. And it's one of those things that it sounded like it wasn't going to go away.
No.
But it was starting to go on to simmer, to use the stove analogy again. And then when Jane Philpott dropped hers, and I thought for sure when she resigned that there was going to be something that Butts was going to say that was a reflection of her, because it seemed real.
Yeah.
Timing was everything, right? It's going to be like she was gone on, I'm going to say Monday night, but it was probably more like Tuesday. Anyway, the beginning of the week, Monday, where we don't seem to pay attention. Well, we do, but lots of people, Mondays and Fridays are notorious for things dropping, right? And what was her line? She said, I'm going to abide by my core values, ethical responsibilities, and constitutional obligations. That's big stuff. The implication there is that something that has gone on beyond those things, ethics, constitutional obligations, and there's been we'll call it a values disruption, I guess. I thought for sure. But I guess her and Rabel were working close together, very close together. I know, particularly in we'll call it the Indigenous file, which has also popped up in this again, because it was part of the shuffle that supposedly wouldn't have happened if it was there. I can't believe they're like sort of blaming Bryson. If he hadn't retired. So it was like before Christmas, Bryson said, I'm going to go. And then they let it go. And then in the New Year said, no, I'm actually going. He can't, you know, couldn't stick around. I don't understand all these retirements before the 8 months. We're going to talk a bit more about that, I guess, in part two here. Yeah, the Indigenous file is going to be deeply affected by this. Both of these women resigning from cabinet, but specifically in terms of what had gone, it was Rabel was offered I want to say the Indian Affairs file, but it's what's it called now? They changed the name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Indian Affairs was split into two, and she was offered that. And she's like, no, I've been against the Indian Act all my life. I don't want that file. So they're pretty much trying to get her to step aside.
She said it was putting Nelson Mandela in charge of the apartheid file.
Exactly. So it's like, and her dad, too, famously, these things are surfacing from 30 or however many years ago with Mr. Rabel, Dad Rabel. Papa Rabel versus Papa Trudeau at a committee. It's like history's repeating. I guess it's called Indigenous Services now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think Butts and Trudeau and company thought that was going to be a good thing. She's like, no way. So then, of course, everything else happened from that, and they stuck... Seamus O'Regan, not stuck, but the shuffle, then there was the other shuffle, and obviously with Jane Philpott gone, there's going to be another shuffle. The continuous shuffling from this on. And
well, Treasury Board's a pretty big deal to not have
absolutely.
Somebody at, with budget coming up. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so they've lost, you know, the key these are key players, like noted people from the kickoff were like, these are significant appointments, super qualified people, and also women reaching the 50-50 split that they were trying for, equity.
Right.
And it is falling apart. There was a comment on social media saying, you know, the man Liberal Party versus the woman Liberal Party in the fall is going to be really interesting. I don't know what they mean by that, but you can sort of see it, though, that there's this split. How are they going to heal that in months? How are they going to heal that in the weeks to come? We don't know.
Like, well, I mean,
it's going to take some serious retreats or whatever they do.
Well, yeah, there's a question of how big the rift is, because Philpott and Wilson Raybould are still in the Liberal caucus, are still planning on running as Liberals mm-hmm. in October. That could be, I don't know, maybe some sort of accord with the PMO side. Like, we don't want to make this look completely rancid, or there may be an expectation that maybe, you know, Trudeau might, you know, give one last go this election, and might, you know, step away, which might introduce the opportunity for leadership. I think that that is one of the biggest questions in this, is like, how can you, in Jane Philpott's words, have no confidence in caucus and the prime minister, who are also the leaders of your party, and not step away from the party? And perhaps there's a cynical calculation there that, you know, they want to keep they want to keep going in parliament, or maybe it's I don't know, it would be admitting defeat on their part for them mm-hmm. to walk away completely. Like, stepping away from cabinet, it makes a statement, but stepping away from government and from caucus is the white flag. So maybe that's the political calculation they're making. And all this to say isn't to say, like, I find the media coverage of it over the top, but I feel like there's two sides of this too. One is, I think if like Butts or Trudeau just went to Raybould and said, hey, there's this thing with SNC-Lavalin. Do you think maybe we could, you know, do something to make them go for the reconciliation and not necessarily a full criminal trial? And she says no, and then they go, okay, and then let bygones be bygones. I think the terrible thing in this is that they seem to keep hammering her and hammering her and hammering her. Like, come on, just, you know, be a team player.
Just play the game,
stuff.
Sister.
Right,
because
at the end of the day, they phase her out, or they kick her out of Attorney General. And who do they put in place? Is David Lametti, who is a rookie MP, but from Montreal. So he, quote unquote, gets it in terms of SNC and all that. Because what is also part of this is the political calculation, is that Trudeau's from Papineau. He's an MP from Quebec. It's important to Quebec. They were talking about the provincial election. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's the other scuzzy part of this, is just that, you know, it was like pure cynical politics, and that wasn't the Trudeau brand.
No, and Butts touched on that when he talked about the 9,000 jobs at stake, because that's very much part of it. It was about it was Beaverton, I think, mm-hmm. that wonderful bastion of truth, said, oh, yeah, there's the 9,000 jobs at stake unless they're at Sears. Which is kind of true. But I'd also, speaking of the National
Post.
But
it's about the quality of jobs too, right?
Well, yeah.
Nobody's fighting for the clerks or like the line, or nobody's fighting for the clerks. But, you know, if you are on the line at Oshawa GM, if you work for SNC-Lavalin, if you work from Bombardier, mm-hmm. if you work for Pipelines, the government will fight to the death to make sure you keep your job.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, and those are the middle-class jobs that
right.
they keep talking about. One of their talking points is always good middle-class jobs. So, yeah. But there was also something we keep defaulting to the Post. Maybe because they don't necessarily have a paywall. I don't know.
But
we do subscribe to certain things, but not all the things. And if we're getting some MSM, you know, we need to troll around, let's say. They had mentioned something that in the criminal code, that something along the lines of the national economic interest, like the jobs at stake at SNC-Lavalin, can't be considered when deciding on granting a deferred prosecution agreement, which is this new thing that the fight is over mm-hmm. that they were trying to get for SNC-Lavalin. So in some ways, what Butts is saying isn't completely kosher. And I don't know whether anything is going to come of it. This is the thing, and I kind of alluded to it on Twitter when I was talking about the show. It's like, hey, it's Canada. Let's form a committee. They have these committees. They talk and talk and talk because we'd like to do that. But realistically, what's going to come of it? There's going to be no criminal charges. There's going
right.
to be lots of navel gazing among the parties. There's going to be declarations from left and right for the the resignations and whatnot. It's never going to happen. There's an election coming. It'll just be like, well, the election's coming. That'll be the correction, whatever it's going to be. So,
well, I mean, the question is, I think, will this still be a thing in October? I mean, will this still be a thing next week? I think it carried on in part because you had the double whammy of Philpott and Butts. And I think it was Don Martin. It was on CTV this morning. He's saying, like, next week it's they're off again. And then the week after that, it's budget. So that's going to, force things off the front page to make room for budget
stuff. I'm sure there'll be lots of plums in the budget.
And then, but then once you start getting, a few weeks out from that, then, then we're almost into April. How long can this last? Especially when it's about all these sort of existential things, like you said, the gender parity in cabinet, the nature of corruption in the country, the influence of lobbyists, the old guard versus the new guard.
And there won't be all kinds of commentary in the summer when everybody's up at the cottage, except for us. We'll be here. So tune in here to hear all of it, but you probably won't hear it in other places.
Well, at least
for the rest of the year, but we'll talk about that at a future date as well. So speaking of elections and other sides of the spectrum or other slices of the spectrum, we have.
Yeah, so, I mean, sort of separate from this. Part of this is the NDP, because you think this would be a really good time for the NDP to capitalize on some things. There is a question of how healthy the party is going to be going into this election, because Nathan Cullen, who has been a member of parliament, was once a leadership candidate himself in, I think, 2012, when the NDPs were looking for someone to succeed Jack Layton. He has announced he will be stepping down. He is the 13th member of the NDP caucus to announce that he will not be seeking re-election. That is out of the original 44. So some of those people have moved on already, like Tom Mulcair. But others, like, what's his name?
Kennedy.
Yeah.
Also moved along.
Kennedy's already the mayor of...
I'm going to call him Kennedy Hudson. Kennedy
but
Stewart.
Murray Rankin has announced that he's not running again. He's still in Parliament. It seems to be an unusual time for the NDP that they have their leader in the House now, but how much of the House is left to lead?
And this is the thing with, we'll call them smaller parties, although I believe that 44 seats was probably the second largest NDP return ever, the top one being the famous Orange Crush, which we covered here, of course. what was that, 100? That was 103 seats, I think?
Yeah.
And most of that was due to the collapse of the Bloc.
59 in Quebec, yeah.
59 in Quebec, so they gained in that respect. Parties such as the NDP who have Romeo Saganash is leaving as well, and David Christopherson, which I think he might be 30 years. He's been there forever. So those are just two more off the top of my head. A lot of their, I guess, power players, you'd say, are disappearing, and that is significant. Now, I also had heard that there's 15 conservatives and 17 liberals not running. So this isn't unique to the NDP. It's not as if they have the most in terms of people who aren't running again.
Proportionally, though.
Proportionally, it's massively significant, I think.
And also, iPolitics had a report that the NDP lags behind in the acclamation of candidates, even behind the Green Party, in terms of the number of candidates that have been acclaimed so far to run in the fall.
Yeah, you hear bits and pieces, but I haven't really seen, because I think some of the other candidates have been in place for a long time.
Well, I mean,
it's like
Lloyd,
this person 4 years ago, you knew that they were going to be the one.
Well, even officially, Lloyd has been officially acclaimed as the Liberal candidate back in November. And I mean, there's always difficulties. I mean, see last spring with the PC candidate here in Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, just anecdotally looking at the local angle, there hasn't been much in the way of who's running for the NDP here.
No, we've both obviously heard things through the vine, but none of it, you know, it's just, well, it might be so-and-so, but that's not a hard commitment or even a slightly more than soft commitment. It's just,
right.
So it's time obviously for them to step it up here, whether the, you know, Guelph itself is a reflection of the bigger picture. It may be in a little bit, and this is the problem when hardcore, long-term members, step away. And when that the gap towards the election keeps getting smaller, it can be difficult to find somebody to fill those shoes. And in some ways, you know, they always hearken back to the Orange Crush and say, "Well, look what happened there." But there was a unique set of circumstances. In fact, I think that they sent. We're saying there's 44 NDP now, but I think it may have been close to no. It was 57. 57 rookies
mm-hmm.
went with that Orange Crush too, and some of those people are now the seasoned ones, like Ruth Ellen Brosseau.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be around, obviously, to run. So it's there is that continuous transition. But getting back to Cullen for a bit, it was you know, some of the things he said was interesting in terms of distance, and he said, well, you know, Ottawa is a good place, but it's better here. And he means his home in where is he? Smithers. Time for another Simpsons joke. Smithers, BC.
Smithers.
Smithers. What's it? Skeena Buckley Valley is his riding, but you know, 15 years of back and forth from BC. It's you can get to Europe some places sooner than you can get to parts of BC.
Yeah.
So it's understandable, and you know they use that line about, well, I'm going to spend more time with the family, but he does have young children. It must be not next to impossible, but very, very hard for somebody youngish. He's not quite 50 yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's been hints, I've heard hints too. I don't know if this is true in terms of him getting involved in BC politics. I think when you're that involved, that you can't just disconnect that, whether as on an advisory role or is he going to get it. When is the next BC election?
The government might fall.
When the government falls over a pipeline or something. which I think wasn't that part of his, no, it was his portfolio at one point. It wasn't called pipelines. It was liaison for BC. And I think that, position was created when all of the, you know, the natural gas pipeline and Trans Mountain were starting to brew. So he's had quite a few, critic portfolios over the year. Was the last one critic for Democratic Reform?
Cullen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think he still is.
For now. Yeah. Oh, that's right. Cause he isn't. Retire. He's not.
No, he's just not running for re-election.
He's going to spend more time with his family in October.
About Democratic Reform.
Have you spoken to him before? Or?
Nathan Cullen?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure we did an interview with him that we put on the show.
That's right. We've just done so many, it's a blur. We don't know.
Pretty sure he's in the archive somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And Brian Topp, who beat him in the. No.
I don't think we've done Brian Topp.
Because Brian Topp, it was Layton. No. Not Layton. Mulcair. Brian Topp, Cullen. So,
mm-hmm.
And everybody now would go, Brian, who are you talking about? Who is this Brian Topp? Maybe he'll be back. Anyway, probably not, but I saw him on Murdoch Mysteries. Anyway, never mind.
Wow, this went off the rails.
Didn't take long.
I just find it interesting that, you know, we had Jagmeet saying, I'm surprised he hasn't been able to get more cachet. It may be, as Sandy and Nora pointed out on their podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, it's just harder for the NDP to get attention, given that, you know, the mainstream media sort of has had longstanding tendrils with the Conservatives and the Liberal Party. So it's always hard for third party to come up the center. But given Jagmeet Singh's dynamism and his newness and you know, a lot of the hype that came along with his election, being the first person of color to lead a major federal party,
mm-hmm.
there hasn't been an opportunity to really capitalize that and really take things up, you know, a notch. And you know, maybe this has to do with the fact that he is a person of color too. May have to do with the fact that, you know, this would be the second election after the Orange Crush, and perhaps there was more momentum going into 2015. I don't know. It's really hard to say. It feels like the NDP should be picking it up.
Exactly.
But especially given the SNC stuff going on. But it seems to that they're kind of stuck in neutral. And this isn't just a federal thing, but when you look around, you have the New Brunswick NDP talking, like basically people who ran for the New Brunswick NDP in the recent provincial election, they're talking about throwing in the towel. When you have Manitoba NDP government lost in 2016, mm-hmm. you have the NDP government in Alberta likely going to lose in next couple of months. It just seems to be sadly kind of a bit of a trend. And, you know, we may come to the end of this current election cycle and we get a little bit in BC, you know, the typical NDP beachheads, a little bit in BC and the working class areas of southwestern Ontario and downtown Toronto. And
the Hammer, for sure.
Yeah.
And that's something they definitely need to do. And this is the thing with Singh's been elected, but almost immediately he's going to have to hit the road.
Yeah.
So he's representing Burnaby's in Parliament, and then when, you know, the adjournment happens post whatever, he's just going to continuously be in motion because that's how it works for leaders. But yeah, I mean, one of the things I just, in my opinion, I think they're going to have to do is sort of yank it away from the Liberals. You know, there's the talk was in the last election that the Liberals pretty much stole the good NDP stuff, right?
Yeah,
the Liberals went tack left and sucked any vote away, not any, but some of the vote away from the NDP. So they really, really, and I'm seeing bits of it here and there, but they really need to do that definition thing and go to that place where they need to tack left pretty much away from the Liberals or come up with. I've heard shades of it when he said, what was the comment that Singh made about 500,000 cooperative homes? That's mm-hmm. newish. I think it's been policy of theirs, but it's not something they've actually been saying.
Yeah.
So 500,000 co-op homes across Canada, things like that. They need to sort of specify and say, this is what we're going to do that's different from the Liberals and, to be fair, the Conservatives and probably the Greens as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know how far away Mulcair was when he said, oh, what was it he said in that? He was like, the Greens are going to draw some votes away from the... It's like, I guess you're a commentator now. You can say what you want, I guess, like we do. But it just seemed really weird. It's like, wow, you're really it was probably a paid gig for him.
Well, right? So. Yeah, he's a professional pundit for CTV now. So he's got to stir the pot. Otherwise, they won't put him on TV.
Yeah.
So that's that.
Let's try and get him on here to do a bit of punditry.
I don't know. Does he have like an exclusive content? I can't tell you what I think for free anyway. Well, maybe we'll look into it.
We do it all the time, so I'm
yeah, we give you.
Why don't you come slum it with us, there, Thomas?
Jeez.
Yeah, how's that for an invitation? Yo, Tom,
good,
you know
too
we're
good
here.
To come on our show.
We're here every Thursday. What?
Well, we know that War 2 counselor James Gordon is not too good to come on our show, and he will be coming up next. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
New into the station, that was James Gordon from the Heritage Hall Sessions, and that was called When You Live Out on the Sidewalk. Mm-hmm. And should we just let James Gordon tell us a little bit about that while he's in the studio?
Yeah, James Gordon is here.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me over.
So this is your newest
It
album,
is.
Recorded live.
Yeah, we did it at the Heritage Hall on Essex Street, the Black Heritage Society. And I have a recording studio, so I tend to make albums just by pecking away in the middle of the night. I thought, shake it up, James, and just invited some of my favorite musical friends and sat in a circle and rented the hall for a few days, and we just went for it and then did it live with an audience the last night. And where better to launch it would be at the same hall, so yeah, we're doing that at the end of this month. So, yeah, I'm kind of excited about it. And it's funny, it's been advertised by my record label as being my 40th album.
Wow.
Really?
Counting my work with Tamarack.
Right.
Just added up this morning. I got 41, actually, when I added up this morning.
The spare, the secret album.
Yeah,
the secret,
about, yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
And now you got to, like, comb through and compare the both lists, right?
Yes.
It's like, where are we off?
Yeah, yeah.
Or where am I not getting credit?
That's it.
And we were talking before, during the break, that you actually got translated into German dance music.
We're going to find it. We're going to find it.
Oh, yeah, look for it. It's just out. Yeah, I had a song called Mining for Gold on the kind of iconic Cowboy Junkies Trinity Sessions album. Paid a lot of bills, that did, because it's a triple platinum album. But it's the 30th anniversary, apparently, of that album.
And
yeah, a German techno band has done a tribute album to the whole thing, and including my little a cappella Canadian folk song with the full Berlin treatment.
Coming next week to Open Sources Golf. Yeah.
Well, I not to get too far into the cultural stuff, but I do know that Black Fawn Films, which is a Guelph-based filmmaking group, they have a lot of fans in Germany.
Oh.
A lot of fans of their horror films in Germany.
Wow, okay.
So Guelph has a pretty big German fan base.
There we go.
Yeah. So,
Two are coming.
Yeah,
soon,
there you go. You should do
that. Yeah.
So to get back to political stuff.
Oh, darn. Okay.
Sadly, this is a political show.
Yeah.
We had the budget.
We did.
Passed on Tuesday. This is your fifth budget.
Yeah.
So how did this compare? How was the process this time?
I got some positives and negatives, I guess, for you. Mm-hmm. I was very impressed. I have to give good credit to our mayor for really doing some due diligence around finding consensus, really talking through things in advance so that we didn't have any big surprises, and found ways that we could be on the same page, I think, on things which we haven't really done as much as anyone would like to over the last few years. And I think that everyone seemed to be pleased with the number that we got to in terms of the tax hike. Where I struggled, and Adam, you might have heard me grumbling about it at the meeting, was...
I might have detected some grumbling.
Yeah, yeah. as pleased as I was, and I think the city's been it's been pretty positive response, I still think in 2019, we need to rethink our goals with budgets. And I think I even said at the meeting, I said, is the lowest budget the best budget?
Mm-hmm.
And I can still see a mentality. I experienced it on Tuesday night where there's still a zeal of, okay, let's get lower, without thinking, okay, what are we sacrificing to get lower and who does it benefit? And to me, maybe as a dyed-in-the-wool socialist, it feels as if when the taxes are creep lower, that benefits those who can actually afford the taxes the most, mm-hmm. but it hinders the well-being of those who suffer by what we have to cut or ignore, or in the case the other night, defer to get to where we want, and who suffers from that. So those are pretty big questions we need to start asking. But generally, I was pretty pleased with the spirit of collaboration that went on, and there was some positive dialogue too.
Mm-hmm. It does make me curious, because I talking to a number of people who ran, but people who won and people who lost, that the tax, lowering taxes wasn't that big on the campaign trail.
No,
that wasn't what people were worried about.
Yeah, yeah. I I got one phone call about this budget when it was announced that maybe it would be up 33.9%. Mm. One call, and I asked my ward mate how many heat calls he got, and he said, I got one. And then we compared notes, and it was the same guy.
Just calling everybody.
But so I really do think that we, when we think about a number, sometimes that's an arbitrary thing. But thinking about what's the over, if we flip that equation around and start with a budget that goes, well, what do we need to make this city the best one it can be? What do we need to do to keep our well-being, our quality of life, and then go, okay, that's what we need. How much does it cost? How do we find a match that? Mm-hmm. So we'll get there eventually.
I think a big piece of that, though, is the well-being grant.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't your proposal, but I mean, I could tell it hurt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. So a little background on that. We, about the only avenue that the city has right now to directly benefit nonprofit groups and cultural groups in the city is this well-being grant. It will hear the results of it next week, actually, and it does so much benefit for outfits that are working on a total shoestring. Mm-hmm. So the suggestion that Councillor Piper and myself had, just to goose it a little bit this year, recognizing the value that we get back for that investment. And there was not an appetite for it. So, and I think, yeah, that's where the only time I lost it in the evening, Adam, was I think I lose it.
Yeah.
Losing it is relative on the Gordon scale.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. But when I said, you know, when I got elected in the first place, yeah, I thought, hey, I work in the cultural sector. I can make a difference in that. But almost any time I'd even say that word, culture, you could see it plummet to the bottom of the priority list. But, well, yeah, we can, these are tight times. We can do without that.
Right.
And maybe I have my own perspective on it, but I'm hearing some disappointment about that too.
Right. And it's, you know, it's always an uphill slog. But I would also add that the community well-being grant doesn't just cover cultural stuff. It covers a lot of cultural activities for sure. But there are also groups like Transition Guelph
for sure,
and the Water Watchers and who benefit.
Yep.
Anyway. I wanted to ask, how's it going with Rodrigo Gall, our union ward mate? How's it different from working with Andy?
To say this as diplomatically as I can, I am very pleased with the energy that my new ward mate is bringing to it. And we don't agree on everything, but we can have a really good dialogue, and it's really been helpful right off the bat, and this is where the diplomacy part comes in. I felt like in the last term, I as a newbie, I was carrying a fair bit of the load, just and I can feel that it's shared now, and this is a part-time pay for what sometimes turns out to be a full-time job, and I'm really pleased to have someone that's going to be a real contributor, and there's lots of positive things about that.
It's good to hear that as a new father, Councillor Gawler has high energy.
Yes, and he just, Augustus, a future emperor of Guelph.
You never know, eh?
You never know. It's from the boardroom empire,
right.
I wanted to ask about, Andy did strike me as someone who was more the sort of a meat and potatoes guy.
Sure.
There's a lot of demand now. It's not just a matter of, sort of waiting for the calls to come in now. There has to be a lot of outreach on your part, too, as a city councilor.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
But I will say, in Andy, my predecessor in role, to his credit, at budget time, his meat and potatoes question was really valuable every year. I missed it this year. Where when we're arguing over pennies and we're worried about, okay, is it going to be 0.5% more or over? He'd always say, "Well, how many cups of coffee is that?" and the answer usually was just a couple, And I think that was a really valuable perspective to add to the conversation.
The coffee metrics.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about, not necessarily, this doesn't come from Guelph, but I imagine it probably piques your interest.
Yes.
Kingston the other day passed a measure that to declare that climate change was an emergency.
Yep.
Would you be the guy to propose such a measure for Guelph? Because I feel that is the James Gordon wheelhouse.
Well, it's a very timely question, Adam, because two Guelph councillors, which is disproportionately high, Leon Piper. Yeah, sister of Leon, and myself are both members of a national organization called the Climate Leadership Caucus, which is made up of elected officials from across the country that have that interest in mind and that vision. And we, the two of us, spent yesterday afternoon on a webinar conference call with people from all over the country talking about that exact thing. And in fact, the Robert Kiley, who introduced the motion in Kingston, and I think Halifax and Vancouver have passed it already, we're sort of looking at the mechanism for it, and they've got a bit of a template. And I think we're an obvious suspect for it. It would have to be, and Leanne or myself will probably be the folks to bring it forward. I think it needs its own little Made in Guelph stamp, though, so I don't know if it would be called exactly the same thing. And I can already predict the criticism about it, in that it would be, some would interpret as being largely symbolic.
Right.
And yet, I think there's a place for symbolism, too.
Yeah.
And the reason why it needs to be made in Guelph is that we already last year, to our credit, I think, as a council, passed this resolution about heading towards 100% renewables. So we're partway there, and yet I think we need ongoing either symbolism or kicks in the pants to say, okay, how are we going to reach that? And we won't reach it unless we realize the sense of urgency around climate, and that's what that motion in Kingston was directly related to.
Right.
So we're going to nudge it a little bit, and I think you'll see something like that. I don't know how much you dived into what the motion entailed, just declaring a climate emergency, but it comes along with a package of saying, okay, we're recognizing that. Here are positive things that we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost gathering, as a community initiative, ways to address it.
Yeah, it's still like when you look at the Green New Deal in the States, I feel like maybe we understand what can be done, or what is within our power to be done. Certainly, you know, these scientific changes are laid out. But I think the nudge is important, too. The ability to say that this is an emergency galvanizes the mind in a certain way. And maybe we don't feel that as much here because we've largely escaped sort of weather-related
consequences.
Can't
see it in your backyard as much. Yeah, that's true. An interesting takeaway I had from this webinar yesterday with this national group is we need to find a balance. We don't want to scare you in that, because if you go, okay, we're all screwed, why would you want to get on board with helping? Because what would be the point? But if you say we will be screwed unless we immediately start to take these actions, and your voice would make a difference with that. Your energies, your volunteer hours, or however you want to contribute to it, even just, you know, putting LED lights in your house. And you can look for steps that I think would make us all feel like we're participating and we have the hope of getting there.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we have a hope of getting out of here on time, I want to plow through some things.
What a segue guy you are. That was very good. He's very good.
Sometimes it works out that way. one of the things that's come up during the budget process is, and actually several different meetings lately, hasn't just been budget, but in terms of the creating a shared agenda for council and creating a list of priorities, can you talk a bit about where council is with that?
Yeah. It's an interesting and, again, timely question because I think we're all acknowledging it came up during the budget discussions that shared agenda or a strat plan, I guess, strategic plan is another way of putting it, is overdue and desperately needed. And the main reason for that is I mean, I'm a good example. I want to do everything at all times. I can say, oh, I got to do that. Let's do that. Yeah. Let's make that motion. And yet if we picked our priorities that we all share, mm-hmm. we would probably get more done by understanding, well, where can we find consensus? Where can we very best put our precious time? And I think that we'd see more positive results. It would be a great benefit to staff mm-hmm. if they knew in advance where they wanted to spend their energies. So we sort of have things come along that go, oh, we better deal with this right now.
Right.
But I think in our first year of this term, if that was established, I'm hoping we start later in the spring with it, then it would really guide us over this term towards something positive and some deliverables.
Right, because I think, you know, speaking as an observer, mm. what I see is that, you know, going back to the community well-being,
yeah.
right, there's some sort of cultural plan being developed. There's also the community plan being yeah. developed. And, you know, that's all fine and well, but if I am starting a cultural group in the
right.
city, you know, maybe I'm not so much interested in what the plans are. Or,
yeah.
you know, if there's what's more of a firm timetable, like when is the right time for me as someone in the cultural sector just to sort of engage on this and
that's
bring
right.
it forward.
So in other words, as a community member, if
yeah.
you knew that priority list too, you'd
yeah.
know where you'd fit in. I can think of a couple examples. Like, you know, I was working last year a bit on the plastics-free
mm-hmm.
movement, which
mm-hmm.
I think we'll see in this spring too, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
But there was always a hurry up and wait. Okay, when's the most opportune time to bring something like that so that, A, we know that it might pass,
mm-hmm.
we know that we have the resources to actually manage it, and that staff has time to bring us a good report about how the mechanics of it would work. So, and if as a community member, yeah, I can see it. You'd see that list and you'd know what you can do. And there's a lot of chicken and egg that goes with it too, right? For instance, you mentioned that community plan.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some say, well, let's see what the community plan is because we'll know what the community wants, and then we can help that inform our strat plan.
Right.
I think they need to be done hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I know that's coming up is looking at ward boundaries,
mm-hmm.
council makeup, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I imagine the experiences of the present council is going
yep.
to inform a lot about that.
For sure.
So just speaking off,
yeah.
speaking for yourself as
okay.
the Ward 2 city councilor,
yeah.
you know, what do you think your job, what do you think you need in to, you know, make your job better, make it, I don't know. To,
yeah.
If you were sort of designing things.
Well, I already alluded to it before. I think
yeah.
our city is big enough that it needs to be a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, if it were, I wouldn't be positive that I want it, because as you know, I'm a huge international rock star too,
right.
and I have to balance that.
Yeah, no, but Germany isn't going to turn
yeah,
music into techno that, itself.
Yeah. That's right. but if we're, I think we have two new counselors, and they're both have come to me and said, "Is it always like this?" Because it's pretty overwhelming right now. There's lots going on, so we could use support. Realigning the boundaries would go hand in hand with that, I think. I think Ward 2 is geographically, we're not the biggest, but
mm-hmm.
I notice like someone that lives up in a townhouse complex up towards Guelph Lake
mm-hmm.
has different concerns and values sometimes than someone that lives downtown around the Arthur and King Street area.
Right.
And it's hard to find that common ground. And I think that rather than just slicing the city up like a pie, they look like where are the population dense areas, but what do they have in common that we might be a representative might be more effective in what they do too. And
yeah.
this is the part, the most dicey part is I think this review also has to come along with conversations about electoral reform too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our opportunity for that too.
Mm-hmm. It's, although the ranked ballot, that
mm-hmm.
not many have gone for that.
No.
But it's, I haven't heard any complaints about it out of London, which was kind of
right.
the one place that did it.
Yeah. And if we have that conversation now, for instance, and you, as you know, with Toronto and other communities, we're under huge pressure to, well, can we get along with half the counselors that we once did? But if there was actually one counselor per ward and there were more wards, that ranked ballot probably would be more effective too,
right.
and would shift the focus on who gets elected and who might choose to run as well.
Mm-hmm. What do you, other than we've alluded to some of the stuff that's going on, but you know, coming up, what are you keeping an eye on? What do you think people should keep an eye on that should be of concern?
We are doing the first time in 30 years, I think, a bylaw review,
mm-hmm.
and that sounds pretty unsexy and boring, but you'd be surprised at how much like public input could really shift a lot of things around. For instance, a real need we have in housing, if we shifted our bylaws around and their zoning so that accessory apartments were a little easier to do,
mm-hmm.
and if you didn't have to, right now I get calls in my ward saying, well, I can't live in this now expensive house unless I have an accessory apartment, but I can't have the apartment unless I have X number of driveways.
Right.
And there are a lot of best practices around the province, especially where you can address that. Also with, it can affect even just our urban design guidelines. And I think revamping those bylaws with the right input could really guide us over the next generation with how the city looks and feels too.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds promising.
Okay, good.
But unfortunately, we are sort of coming to the end of our time. So just, you know, we always want to give everybody an opportunity if people want to get in touch with you and talk, rap about whatever, techno music.
Yeah.
How can people find you?
James.Gordon@Guelph.ca, or they can call me. It's this big risk I'm taking here, giving my phone number. City phone is 519-827-6481.
All right. And they can find you every Thursday morning at Breezy Corners.
That's right. Yeah. And that's been a good way to gauge what the vibe in the city is.
Pretty successful.
I think so.
Like half the restaurant is just people for your...
Yeah, well, we're up to, I don't remember when last time you were there, up to like sometimes 50 and 60 people.
Yeah.
And we have guest speakers. And
one waitress handles everybody.
I know.
It's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, so if we made Bev the mayor, or the CAO, that's the job that's troubling. We have a good mayor now, so get the CAO job to her and she'd have us sort out really quickly.
Are you saying that because Cam now lives on Socialist Street?
Yes, that's right.
We'll leave that there. But James, thanks so much for stopping by.
And pleasure.
Thank you for bringing the literally bringing the music.
All right. Thank you.
And you can stay connected to us at our website, opensourcesguelph.com. Find us on Facebook at Open Sources Newswire. Go to Twitter and find us there at @OS_Guelph. And you can listen to this and past episodes of the show on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and the Spotify. I can be found on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to my site, guelphpolitico.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at spannerbrook.wordpress.com. And don't forget, James Gordon, Friday, March 29th at the Heritage Hall, 7:30.
Nice.
And Pennsylvania, too, right? You're playing the States. He's international.
Yeah, heading to the States in April.
Tickets are $25. It's not a free show. James has to get paid.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. No, my massive band has to get paid.
Looks fantastic.
The crane shots don't pay for themselves.
No.
Anyway, DJ Sounds Good to Me is here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. And we'll be back here Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources. And we will... see you then.